Welcome to Matters of Experience, the podcast where we dive into the ideas, innovations, and imaginations shaping the world of designed experiences, from museums to multimedia, from architecture to AI. We explore how creativity transforms space into story. If you're joining us for the first time, we're glad you're here. And to our regular listeners, thank you for coming back and being part of the conversation. If you enjoy what you hear, please take a moment to rate the show and share it with a friend. It helps curious minds find us. So I'm Abigail Honor.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brenda Cowan.
And today's episode is a conversation with AI guru Marlene Emig, who is a creative designer, AI educator, and spatial design storyteller at Experiential Studio Berlin, where she asks people, and I love this because it's up there on the website, to dream with me, which I think for the work we all do is exactly where you should start, and honestly with a finished product end there too. So for over 14 years, Marlene has led large-scale exhibition and experience design projects across the world with clients including FIFA, Formula One, and Singapore's Botanic Gardens. I love that in our profession, we get to go to from the fastest cars on the planet to flowers that, you know, they just blow in the wind. It's incredible the scope of projects and subject matters that we tackle. And in 2022, Marlene rebuilt her entire workflow around AI and real-time tools such as Unreal Engine, pioneering new methods that merge creativity and technology without sacrificing authorship or quality, which is what we'll talk about today. And alongside her commissioned work, she's trained more than 130 professionals across more than 25 countries, helping design leaders integrate AI and present their work with greater speed, clarity, and impact. And most importantly, she is an alum of Brenda's graduate program.
We love you, Marlene.
And in 2024, she taught master students at FIT in New York. So huge welcome to the show, Marlene. Really looking forward to talking with you.
Thank you very much for having me. As I already said, I'm a huge fan of your podcast, and I love the case that you make in this in these sessions. So it's wonderful to be here.
So we're really sort of excited to learn about the incredible work you're doing. It's interesting to me what a creative needs to be in our time, in this particular time, or maybe it's always been that way, mixing art, drawing, design with technology. You know, when I think back to Leonardo da Vinci, who you could argue was an outlier back then, but you see both and more in action with him doing the art, the design, and the technology when he was building all his machines. But I know a lot of creatives who struggle with technology, and I'm sure you have some stories to share. I'm looking forward to that because a lot of people just didn't imagine that they would have to embrace technology with design, for example. But first of all, what's your background? And have you always been drawn to both art and technology? Or did that evolve, or did you embrace it as times moved on?
Technology has always been part of my world, not necessarily for work, but just in general. I don't know, very little people know that I actually lived in Japan for a very long time. And so that's where I really like got my first impressions with technology. Then I obviously got into design. I studied graphic design in my undergrad. And then moved into thinking, I want something like World Expo, something bigger, something that you can feel, that you can work with, that just has an impression and an experience to go with. And so that was just my dreaming point, I guess, at the time when I was still in graphic design working in 2D. Obviously, there's a lot of storytelling you can do in 2D, but I always thought 3D is the way to go, something spatial, something to live through. An experience. And so I ended up looking for a program that kind of taught me that. And so I ended up in Brenda's master's course and really pioneered there. And it sparked something in me. And it was exactly what I was looking for. And I would say, like, now, 15 years later, 14 years later, I definitely found what I love. So I like the whole idea of exhibition design, experience design, and really using emotion and storytelling to make somebody else's free time valuable with the work that I get to do is something that always Yeah, that was basically the spark that I needed in order to just find my place in the world, in my profession. And we're all just driven by passion. And I think that's kind of the key to everything I do. I try to continue nurturing that in my own commissioned work, but also obviously now my teaching that I do in order to help designers push into this next era with technology. And so working with software, that was always very easy to me. Because I love it. I'm curious about it. And knowing more software always felt like it enriched me because it was a tool for me to use, not necessarily something to hold me back, because I always enjoyed working with two hands as well. I did a lot of ceramics in the past and anything that I could get my hands on. Prototyping was always a fun aspect, but also storytelling and writing, those are also things I enjoy. I don't know. There's a lot of facets that kind of make me who I am. And so technology has just been a wonderful way of connecting all the different dots in how I like to work and how I dream and how I sort of think of all these different stories that hopefully will spark something in somebody and educate them at the same time, or at least give them a moment to just sort of pause and dream and reflect.
No, that's awesome.
That's a wonderful answer mm-hmm. to the question. And it really speaks to how dimensional you are as a person, as a creative person. And certainly, you know, speaks to how it is that you're able to create such a wide range of projects and with a lot of depth. I want to bring us kind of to that fundamental just for a quick second. How do you approach the interpretation of content? How do you approach the crafting of a story in your exhibition projects? And have the tools and technologies that you're using now changed the way in which folks are crafting stories? What does it look like on your end?
Oh, it's changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
The one key message in every creative agency I worked in was always, we don't have, the client is not paying for research. You know, we only have, I don't know, 4 days, 5 days to work on the entire pitch. So we're going to give ourselves 1 day to research. Okay, so we have a team of five people. Everybody goes in different directions, researches, comes back. And we see, you know, we've spread all the research and see, okay, these are things to keep. These are things to dive in deeper. And then we kind of just made everything, like patched it together and made it work for the short time that we had to do research. And so this is where now it's just wonderful to have this ability to do deep research in the shortest time. You know, I like to start with writing my own creative brief. And this is obviously driven with AI because I want to have all my important elements inside my brief, which I then formulate into my data set that gets me started. So I start with data now, my own personally written data set, which is my creative brief. And I think it always helps on focusing yourself, adding clarity to your topic, and then really getting to dive into content. And this content is a deep dive, not just, you know, at first in the creative brief, it's a very, very quick session of research to just nail down those key content topics that have something interesting that we want to dive in deeper. And then I go into this second session, I would say, of research, because I already have my data set that's sort of focusing me on where my project is heading from start to finish. And if you have a whole team of designers, chances are everybody's going to go off into different directions, and then possibly we'll come back with different things that actually don't match the brief entirely. So in order to really focus the design process from the start, I find it wonderful to use these AI tools because we can finally really dive in and have a solid foundation at the beginning so that the end outcome really has richness.
So you've got the creative brief, you've, you know, won the job, you're working on it. Then you've also got the client team's experts, right? The subject matter experts. So have there ever been challenges, you know, sort of integrating the people experts with the AI expertise, or what does that look like?
Actually, it makes it easier because I can utilize the client's content much better.
Right.
I use it for my analysis and how I select the experiences that make sense and are valuable. Obviously, the client decides, you know, what direction to head, what are the content points that or the story points that they want to develop. I mean, all we want to do is make sense of the world with everything we see and hear. So these, yeah, the content is the same thing. Research, content, if it's a book that was written, 400 pages, how do you analyze that so quickly? We used to spend, if that was the case, we would have to spend two weeks just digesting the content. And now we have these methods of working deeper as well, and also maybe working in reverse sometimes, which I love doing. So it doesn't have to follow the same structure as it used to. And sometimes I get to reiterate and circle back to original content and improve things as well. And there's also no harm in that, because now we can do things quicker. So it's much easier to course correct when things are going in the wrong direction now, because you haven't invested 3 weeks of your, you know, staff's time or your time on creating these visuals on something that ends up then sort of drifting away. I mean, we've all been in these cases, and then we came together as a team thinking, okay, what should we do? Should we start over? Should we course correct in a different way? And usually when you've just gone too far, you just say, okay, never mind, we'll fix it. But we can't go back from this to the start, so we just need to finish. And then I think you lose a lot of these iteration processes that make something better. And I think that's where I see the biggest win in this whole technology shift, where we have this chance of almost working in spirals or in loops, or I don't know how you want to say it, outside of the box, but really in a different order and perspective, and maybe multiple perspectives, but really reiterating things when you have the chance to do it. And then not necessarily starting over, but trying things out, having that chance and that time frame to actually try things that we didn't have before.
I think just to jump in, Marlena, I think that word iteration is always critical. Been key to my creativity, even if it's a hand, a piece of paper on sketch. So I completely agree with you. Well, I completely agree with everything you're saying. Mm. And I think you do iterate to a better result, and a better result for the clients as well. I've noticed that when you're working and talking with them and sharing progress, they are part of the process more. They can iterate alongside you, and it becomes a totally collaborative project, which I think then they're bringing a lot of their institutional learnings. The curators bring what they know, the researchers, and you can sort of build together. So I wanted to talk really quickly. So the landscape for us as designers is with AI is it's really evolving very, very, very quickly over the last 3 to 5 years, or you could say 3 to 5 weeks.
3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah. So it's how do you keep up with the constant learning as new AI and ways of doing things get better and better, and there's different iterations? Is it best to sort of wait and join in, like, I don't know, 4 to 6 months when everything's sort of cleared up a little bit and the big players are there and you're like, oh no, this is the technology I should be learning. You know, what advice do you give designers?
It's never too late, because yes, I obviously had an earlier start, and it made it much easier for me to slowly, bit by bit, sort of work the technology out and different processes that work for me, and just sort of, yeah, iterate and sort of discover my way of working with it, just as any creative sort of creates their workflow with old tools, new tools, mixed tools, hands-on sketching. I mean, I sketch more now probably than I used to, just because it helps me guide my AI output. I still 3D build models, renderings. I still do all that. So that hasn't changed for me. It's just that to me is now a method of how I can guide my AI output or my creative process. I think it's also just how you earlier said clients are asking for it. I mean, obviously now I have the luxury of choosing my clients, and I did this specifically in order to stay up to date with AI. I've always been a perfectionist, and now my mantra is better done than perfect, which means try it out, see if it works for you, and if it does, keep it. If it doesn't, move on. I have the tools that I like to use. I keep adding new ones, of course, but I also keep reiterating and seeing if my process is still the right one for me. And I think You will only be able to do that if you actually dive in to get to know things and to try them out and to actually understand what AI truly means. And I think a lot of fear comes from just not knowing.
And also we've noticed, like, we had a few designers who were reluctant to take on AI or start to use AI, but as soon as they realized they had to, they produced some of the best visuals and designs, better than the people who've been using it for a long time, because everybody uses it in their, as you mentioned, their own workflow, their own way and the way that they work. So it's very adaptable to the person, I've found, surprisingly, actually. It's not a one size fits all.
We have all these different hats to wear in this profession. And AI has just given us more professionalism in wearing these hats that we haven't been trained in. Because most likely we'll all have two different backgrounds, a bachelor background and a master's background. And those together will be kind of what we've always been focusing on. But now we have the ability to add so many different ways of filmmaking is something people went to school for. And now we have the chance to at least do small narrative stories also in terms of filmmaking for our work that can be used in an exhibition, or narrative storytelling can now be much richer. And so I think that's one of the biggest, I mean, for our industry, what we've actually gained as designers.
Part of the conversations that, you know, I'm always finding myself engaged with are about ethics. What are the ethics? What are the things about, you know, related to intellectual property rights? And what are the boundaries? What do we show to a client? What do we use only internally and never show to a client? Who owns what? What does that look like for you? Do you, like, do you draw specific lines that, you know, you'll never work outside of? Or what are your own rules in ethics?
Obviously, we want to create original work. That's our intention. We want to make something that speaks us, has our style and our voice. So I think it comes natural to want to do something original. That said, obviously, research, we've always been using mood boards with imagery that has been, you know, already built by other wonderful designers and creative agencies and, you know, museums or other firms. But what we can now change, obviously, is be more specific to the client. So now we actually have the chance to not have to scroll through Pinterest for hours and then find that one image that kind of works and another image that also kind of works. So now we can really tailor it to our design needs, our clients, what's their message, what's their branding. So in terms of AI, my big rule is I do not use other people's work. I always use generated AI material to guide the rest of my generated work, things that I have created. Obviously, you can blend different inspirational images together. The other thing is, of course, post-production. You know, how much do you actually change in the image and work over it and really make it your own style? Everybody's Photoshop signature was fairly known back in the day, I would say. Like, I had my way of working with Photoshop on my renderings and everybody knew that it came from me. So we all have our certain styles, and I think that has to show in the AI work you do. Of course, if you're just doing generic AI work, it will all look the same, but I think designers are not open to that. Designers want to be creative and original. And so I think our tendency, I guess we're lucky because our tendency is always going to be to make something our creatively our own.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is your work right now. Can you give us some examples of some spatial design that you've either already recently opened or working on? Anything you can talk about where you used AI and how it helped your design?
Most of the time, the work that I get in is literally my client asking me to do something with AI. And so generally, they come to me because of time restraints and needing different ideas, a variety of ideas, and also wanting to be part of the process. And I love this. I invite this because I always feel if we can start the dialogue early, it just makes the process more enjoyable for the client and for myself. And so I love the fact that the clients are the ones pushing this, but and I really truly embrace this. And this is the client shift that I've been seeing over the past year. The clients are a step ahead. The creative agencies are not there yet, but the clients are already really embracing AI. So they're asking for more input, more variety. And they say we don't want finished, polished things. Just give us many ideas and then we can start sorting things out and have a dialogue going on. And so I do a lot of that kind of ideation work. I did a lobby installation for a casino project, for an actual casino in Macau. Can't say too much about it, but the idea was really to have a lot of different ideas in a very short time. The other thing that I've also been doing is obviously integrating world building with Unreal Engine and really coming up with ways to show a brand in a different light, sort of storytelling in a different, like, dreamy world kind of way. And I think that's maybe more driven by the younger generation because they just want to be in a different world. But then I also do very generic exhibition trade show work. So it's really a bit of everything.
I'm curious, you mentioned that, you know, you're still doing sketching by hand at times and that you find a lot of interplay between some what I would call analog skills and your digital skill set. Is there still a role for things such as prototype making with your hands and all of that?
Prototyping is a big thing. And I would say you can start making things from, I don't know, Play-Doh and record them and then transform them into this, I don't know, magical world. But you can also have these architectural, sculptural forms that you can then work into something different. And so whether you're sketching or using clay or using, I don't know, cake dough or paper models, what a wonderful thing. They're still around. And I think they're still necessary because we can take pictures and videos of them. And as soon as you have video, you have data and you have footage that you can then move into something with AI that makes it something real and changes perspective, changes scale from, you know, miniature to, I don't know, humongous. And that's the best AI work I've seen has always combined real elements with AI.
That is
whether this
great
is
to hear.
Scanning a scene or scanning an object. I've gone on site visits and just scanned the whole site and then made something, brought it in back into my project software and made something very, very different from it. So those kind of things, I think I still go on site visits in order to document things. I still make things out of clay. I still make things out of whatever I can find and then create footage from it. So I think hands-on is even more needed now.
Yeah, and we are, as you mentioned, designing for real spaces, for real human-sized people to be walking around or rolling around in, whatever. So I think that it makes perfect sense to use that hybrid approach because we recently did a bunch of commercials in AI. We're just finishing it now. Hugely challenging, incredibly nerve-wracking because you have to get it right. It's not just a car, it's this car that has to look exactly right. And AI is not great at imitating exactly. So when you're talking about fenders or wheel hubs or all the details, we had to go backwards and forwards between our 3D model and movement with our camera. Mm. So we'd track it all, then give it back to AI to make it, recreate it in video. So it's a little bit of a backwards and forwards between the old 3D world or modeling and AI to be able to get the moves right. But play, as you were saying, playing with different realities, with different spaces, with different objects. I understand for the concepting, it's less stringent and it doesn't have to be exact. How are you working with AI when it comes to maybe later on in the process? Or are you not yet with the actual spatial real measurements, building real things in real places? Because I understand how the beginning part works for you, but how does sort of the latter part work?
I changed everything in 2022 and decided, okay, let me look for options where I can integrate AI because I know whatever I'm going to do from now on to be future ready and to be sort of just have the ability to integrate what I make. I've obviously changed to Unreal Engine for that purpose just because there is a lot that's possible. And I actually build an AI as well. So in the end, I build everything in scale. But I think nobody really knows where this is heading. I just assume that we're not going to be talking about using AI or not using AI. Mm-hmm. We're just going to be integrating it. It's right. going to be part of our software. It's going to be part of our process. It's just what the direction we're heading. So I would say it makes sense to get started and not to wait and think, okay, I'll wait until everything's perfect, because we don't know what perfect means yet. We are also shaping it. That's the other thing. The community is very warm and open, the AI community. If there is a quest and we need to achieve something, it's very easy to just ask the question and get 200 responses back of people who are super willing to give their excitement about the topic and their methods and how they did it. And I think that's different from before, where creators were always very protective over how they did things, not to give away too much of their style and their signature. But now with the AI, everybody has the same tools. The question is, how do you use it? So, and people are excited to share that. So I think we're also the ones shaping this industry. So just to wait and sit doesn't, it feels to me like we're missing out on the aspect where we as creatives or as design professionals can still steer the ship a little bit. Yes, we're only one person, but I think together as just a creative industry, we have a lot of power and we can steer this ship into a direction where it is commercially ethical and where we're still creating stunning work and not generic AI. There's a lot of power, I think, that we can achieve just with a little patience, because not everything is possible. But we're at a point where, I mean, none of us thought we would have that much creative control 4 years ago. So this is really, really cool. I think
Wow.
it's a wonderful time to be alive, so, and to work on
Oh,
this.
I agree. And I've
Oh,
got to say, you are such an excellent model of, I think, how to approach these tools, how to approach technology in a way that is very fundamentally human. And as a creative person, using your hands, using your eyes, using your ears, using your heart. So kudos to you, Marlena. Seriously.
thank you.
You sort of demystified a lot, I think, for our audience and made it much more approachable and inspirational. And the same way, you also, it's kind of like it's coming. Embrace it now. Like don't put it off anymore. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, this is not something to fear. You can make it work for yourself. And so I think the only thing that my only quest is always just to create curiosity and spark something in someone to get started, build something amazing with the tools that we have. And we've always been like this. It doesn't matter what kind of tools they are.
Okay, so everybody, you heard Marlena, build something amazing. Get out there now, pick up the handiest AI tool, the one you like the most, and start there. So thank you, Marlena. Thank you, everyone who tuned in today. If you like what you heard, please subscribe for more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts and make sure to leave a rating and a review. Thank you, and see you next time.
Take care, everybody.
Matters of Experience is produced by Lorem Ipsum Corp and recorded at Hangar Studios. Tune in next time for more fun discussions about experience design.